From ESPN's Pod Center, this is NBA Lockdown.
There's Durant, left wing, up top to Draymond Green, right side to Curry. Using a screen, Curry wide open, right wing, three is good! The Warriors have scored the first 13 points of the third quarter, the last eight scored by Curry.
That is courtesy of ESPN Radio. Welcome to another edition of NBA Lockdown. I'm Israel Gutierrez alongside Om Young-Misook, and that was one of the highlights. Didn't take very long for that second half to become not very interesting, but one of the highlights in the Warriors' Game 1 defeat of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And Om, all right, so I was saying before the finals that it wasn't, I don't think it was necessarily hype that was built up. It was sort of an impatience, and it was a threat, like, this better be good, not like this is going to be good. And I don't know what you thought about that, but even when it was sort of competitive in that first half, it just didn't – I don't know. I didn't get the feel of great basketball. I don't know if it's because the Warriors are that good or they make success that boring at this point, but I didn't feel like I was watching the greatest finals ever.
I think we all got excited in that first quarter because the score was close and it was a little like back and forth, almost kind of like watching tennis, like you're looking left, you're looking right, things like that. But you're right, aesthetically it wasn't good basketball. It wasn't like they were making shot after shot after shot. And I think maybe it was kind of like what we were hoping for and what we wanted more than what really happened, if that makes sense. I think we got caught up in the hype that we were waiting from this from last year's finals, and then we got a little bit of a tease in the regular season when the two played. And then in the first half, it was competitive. But I think as the game went on, I don't know about you, Izzy, but I felt like I was watching the Cavs trying to hang with Golden State, and they're like, you know what, we can do this, we can do this. And then every time Kevin Durant would do something, hit a three or come down the lane and dunk, it kind of felt like, and maybe this is all in my mind, okay? But I felt like as if I were one of the Cavaliers and I was thinking to myself, man, this is just not fair. Like, we faced this Golden State team last year and barely beat them, and now they go and add this 7-foot all-everything, and every time we try to get close, this guy does something. This just isn't fair. And then it felt like as the game went on, it was almost like the Cavs may have kind of just accepted it. Like, man, I don't know if we can hang with this team in this place right now in game one with the way they're playing, and every time Durant comes down, we just have nothing to do. And they obviously made a lot of mistakes that I think they can clean up. One, their transition defense. Every time Kevin Durant came down, for some reason, a guy would fan out to the three-point line, to cover the three-point line, but not stop ball. Number two, their turnovers, which I think really is the number one problem that they had. 20 turnovers, you cannot do against this team. You cannot throw fuel to the fire for them and give them that many transition buckets. You got to make things difficult for them. And I felt like defensively, look, if they're able to hold Golden State somehow to 113 points, and I know it's all changed once they got into that big blowout stage, but I think you could live with these numbers. If defensively, if you can hold your turnovers down and somehow keep Klay Thompson and Draymond Green to the numbers that offensively that they were doing, you can probably live with that. I also think, number three, Cleveland was not ready for Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, for some reason, to get up into them as much as they did, especially Klay Thompson. I mean, he held every guy he defended 1-12 shooting, and the big three was 1-11 when Klay Thompson guarded them, and Klay Thompson got into them. I mean, it was awesome to watch. He may be struggling offensively, but defensively, he was awesome.
Yeah, he better do some stuff on defense after going 3-16. But let's welcome in George Sedano. George, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up? Sorry, I'm late.
That's all right. So we're trying to figure out whether that was good or not yesterday, whether that was fun or not yesterday, because that I know it's a tough place to start. But
yes,
you know, we were talking about the expectations, and I was saying it wasn't so much expectations, like it wasn't like people were making this as the greatest finals ever. It's just that we were so tired of waiting, so we just built it up, and it was more of a threat, like this better be good. And I didn't think it was that good last night.
I mean, it wasn't at the end. Like, I know it's not that good when I'm sitting there and I'm on my phone, right? Like, if I'm on my phone, it's not that good, because when it was good and competitive, I was sitting there and I would just wait to use my phone and Twitter in the commercial breaks for the most part. That's kind of my barometer on these things. So, yeah, at the end it wasn't good. But it was fun for a while. Like when you saw Steph like shake LeBron or, you know, KD and the whole Rihanna thing. Like all that stuff and all the dunks. Like that was fun to watch. But then by the end you're like, yeah, this thing's over. About, you know, 5 minutes to go, you knew it was
well,
all
I don't know if it's just great execution or great talent, but it seems like the Warriors get too many easy shots to the point where you're just like, wait a second, is that just horrible defense? Like, why is Durant dunking all the time, and why is Steph Curry wide the hell open?
Yeah, it's both, right? It's really bad defense. Like, let's not forget the Cavs were the seventh worst defense in transition this year. And, you know, we sat here and we talked about flipping a switch and this, that, and the other. And I think anyone who really thought about this and thought this through understood that the flipping the switch thing for the Cavs didn't mean the Eastern Conference, because they were clearly better than all those teams. It meant, can they flip a switch defensively against a juggernaut on both sides of the ball like Golden State is, you know, top two basically in both categories? And clearly yesterday the answer was no. It's like it's basically the equivalent of a guy playing in a JV game and then trying to play the next day in a varsity game and going, oh yeah, these guys are bigger, stronger, and faster. This isn't the same speed. It's not the same league. It's not even the same classification that I should be playing in right now.
It's funny.
It was still fun kind of watching this, of just how good Golden State is, because it came against Cleveland. I know we've been talking about Cleveland's defense for a long time, but I think after watching Cleveland through the Eastern Conference, and you knew it was going to be a different level, a different caliber of opponent, but to still see it in front of your face of Golden State being able to do this almost at will to Cleveland was still really impressive to me.
This great stat from a Brian Windhorst story on the Cavs defense. The Warriors made 21 baskets in the paint in the first half against the Cavs, 19 of them in the restricted area. Six of those were dunks from Durant. But they still missed somehow 15 layups
in the first half.
And so they were basically getting anything they wanted. And that, I don't think, and yet we're still only up 8, by the way, at halftime. But I think that's obviously something that the Cavs can fix, because they can't go from having somewhat adjusted that defense to being god awful again within, you know, a span of what, a week's rest. And, you know, LeBron does have a tendency to lose these game ones, and he's rebounded before. I just wonder if there is any sort of recovery from this when it doesn't look like LeBron can do all the things off the ball that he can do against other teams, because you're just kind of handcuffed to whatever talent is closest to you.
Yeah, listen, I'm with you 100%. It is interesting to me, though, that there are a lot of people holding on to this notion of, well, remember what happened last year? Well, here's the thing. There's not going to be a dick punch this year from Draymond. There's Steph Curry with two healthy knees. And, oh, yeah, they upgraded from Harrison Barnes to Kevin Durant. Like, that's what you saw yesterday. And that's why this series is going to look a lot like yesterday. Now, I'm not saying that the Cavs can't win a game or they can make some games competitive. But all in all, I happen to think most of the games that we'll see are going to look like this. And, by the way, last year, the games we saw kind of looked like this one way or another.
I mean, you know, I guess in order for it to be more competitive, obviously the big three has to play better. I mean, I thought LeBron did what he could, but I think after a while he could get only discouraged by what was happening. I mean, it's like I said earlier, I don't know if you heard, George, but it just kind of felt like if you were the Cavaliers, you're like, oh, we're hanging with them in the first quarter. But then every time Durant did something, it was like, man, this just isn't fair. This just isn't fair that they got a 7-foot guy who could do everything. They added him to the mix after last year. But like Kyrie Irving, 24 points. That was a quiet 24 points, and then he wasn't able to do anything when Clay was on him. Kevin Love, you know, basically had, what, 15 and 21 rebounds. But it was, like, kind of empty. I mean, it was like a feeble offensive performance, really.
It was definitely inefficient.
When the game was on the line, when they needed him. And so they obviously need – and then the role players just – I mean – Deron Williams looked horrible. I mean, Richard Jefferson looked like he has more offense than Deron Williams at this point, which is crazy to think. And Kyle Korver was non-existent. J.R. Smith It's almost like maybe these guys are a little too worried on defense with these guys, and it's affecting their offense. They almost have to have, it seems like, a really perfect game to beat the Warriors, and that's going to be difficult. And obviously there's no way, like, this team, what, Golden State has lost once in the last 29 games, so there's no way they're going to lose four games in the next six tries.
Those guys are just too old is the problem. They're too old to be consistent. Like,
yep.
There was a time in these playoffs where you look at their bench, you're like, man, Deron Williams is playing his butt off. And, you know, who else? Kyle Korver was putting up shots, and Channing Frye was hitting, and you're just like, wow, that's impressive. That's a good balance there. And then all of a sudden you can't play Channing Frye. Kyle Korver, I don't know if they don't seek him enough, if they don't utilize him in the offense enough, but he's not getting enough shots to get into any sort of rhythm. He gives you no points. And, yeah, Deron Williams just at times looks old. And sometimes he looks good, sometimes he looks old, and then other times you've got Richard Jefferson out there. You know, and just watching the highlights of last year's finals, you just have to slap yourself in the face to remember, man, Richard Jefferson, like, did some things in 2016 in the finals, and, oh, man, he's back. And you're expecting more from him in 2017? I don't know if you can. That's tough to ask.
Oh, it's incredible when I'm watching Richard. I mean, I covered that New Jersey Nets
team.
Yes, you did.
Yes,
so I covered
like
Richard Jefferson as a rookie. Yeah, and that was like freaking 15 years ago. Like, I think to myself, like, this is unbelievable. This guy's still playing in the finals. And, like, and as a guy from New York and New Jersey, you know, I was looking at and I was thinking, like, man, Deron Williams, his game is completely gone. I mean, his jumper, he's got no lift on his jumper, and he's not making anything. And that's when I was like, God, I can't believe Richard Jefferson has more game left than Deron Williams. It's kind of sad to watch.
All right, well, let's talk about this problem that the Cavs have, which is Kevin Durant. Like you said, Ohm, you get that type of shooting from Klay Thompson, you get that type of shooting from Draymond, and you think, yeah, you know what, I got a chance to beat the Warriors, but somebody drops 38, 8-8 on you. It feels like he kind of knew – is reacting, George, as if the pressure is on him, as if the Warriors, like, he is the biggest loser if he loses of anybody on the floor, more so than LeBron, more so than Steph, more so than Draymond. If he comes out of this with an L, Kevin Durant is the biggest loser, and he sort of acted that way yesterday and, frankly, showed off, you know, the fact that he might even be better. After all this noise that we hear about him, oh, he better win a championship, he might be the best Kevin Durant we've seen ever right now.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Did you see the Nike thing, the tweet that they put out there this morning?
No.
They tweeted out, let me find it for you. They tweeted out at Nike Basketball, it's a picture of Durant kind of with a scowl after hitting a shot, and it says, they say he's soft, in quotes.
I did see that, actually.
And it says, they talk, we play. And, yeah, I do think there is this sense of, oh, he took the easy way out, and he's taking a back seat to Steph. It's not his team. All the stuff we heard with LeBron, by the way, back in 2010. And then Kevin is asserting himself as the guy, much like LeBron did with Miami. And I think that that's kind of what's happening here. It's Kevin saying, yeah, mother bleepers, I absolutely am still the guy that I was in OKC. And you know what? As you pointed out, I may be better because I've got better teammates now.
Or because he just worked on his game and is even
that too.
More efficient.
That too. Yeah, no doubt.
Well, the other thing too is KD, a lot of his shots were wide open. He got wide open dunks coast to coast. It could not have been any easier for him, set up for him in that first game. I mean, I think for Kevin Durant, he owes a lot to LeBron James, because I feel like LeBron has paved this way for him, first by creating the first super team and going there and taking on the brunt of an entire, like, basketball world and universe upset with him for doing that. And if you remember early in that Dallas series when he played them, there was still like a kind of like a feeling out process for LeBron, where he didn't want to, it seemed like he didn't want to step on Dwayne Wade's toes, and, you know, they were trying to figure things out. Where Durant seems very comfortable with this team, and everything seems to be meshing. And also, I don't think he's not nearly getting the same amount of hate that LeBron got when he went to Miami, and that's because LeBron did this years ago. So I feel like maybe in his head, Kevin Durant's creating this to kind of motivate himself, but things are certainly a lot easier than what LeBron went through, and I think he has LeBron to thank for that.
Yeah, and it's also this different animal of, hey, like, not only do I have to win, but it's probably best if I go ahead and win Finals MVP. So everybody could just say, oh, I didn't ride you know, Steph Curry's coattails to this championship. Although it would seem like Steph kind of wants that MVP too. Does it seem like both of those guys really want that MVP of the finals? Because Steph didn't get it the last championship, and he has a lot to make up for last year with some of that play down the stretch. And obviously, we know why KD does. Like, I feel like they're kind of going to fight for it a little bit.
I totally agree with that. I think with Curry, I think he's, you know, dead set on trying to, you know, basically play the way that he wanted to and the way many of us expected him to play in the last two finals, but didn't. And I think we're expecting him to, you know, I think he's going to try and do that in these finals. It's going to be exciting. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll end up with co-MVPs. I mean, I don't know. Can Kevin Durant really keep this up, this pace of, like, almost like having 40 points and a near triple-double in every game? I don't think it's going to be that easy for him through these finals. So I think with Curry, though, it's like, at some point now, Cleveland's defense is going to have to figure out how to slow down Kevin Durant, yep, and maybe say we're going to take our chances with Curry, knowing that Curry has struggled against us before. You know, maybe that's what Cleveland's thought process will be for the remainder of the finals.
That's a good point, though, there, Ohm, because, and I know I'm talking a lot about aesthetics and how things look, but Steph Curry looked like he had a lot more fun in that first game than I remember him having in any other finals game, right? 2 years ago, he started off struggling and then had to sort of work his way back and didn't win MVP, and last year it was hurt and wasn't his normal self, and it feels like maybe he can sort of take that and build on it even and get even better as these finals go along. And, you know, yeah, if the Cavs decide, say, hey, let's throw an extra body, pay extra attention to Durant because it feels like we can handle the other guys, look what we did with Klay and Draymond, then maybe, you know, we can actually beat this team. But if Steph keeps lighting it up, then good luck. There is the other side, George, of LeBron being able to bounce back from this. You know, we mentioned earlier that in that first half, even though the Warriors were getting everything they wanted and missed bunch of easy shots, you know, the Cavs were still in there and mixing it up. I don't know if LeBron, George, handles getting embarrassed as well as he does just losing. Because he got embarrassed a couple times. He got shook. Yeah, he slid on the floor. He did some weird things out there.
Got ripped a bunch of times.
Got ripped clean. And I don't know if he comes back from that, you know, beast mode, or if he comes back from that a little kind of, you know, delicately and lets other people try to take over.
Oh, I think he absolutely goes beast mode. I think he kind of has to, but beast mode for LeBron is different than beast mode for a lot of other guys, right? Like, beast mode for LeBron is 35 points, you know, 10 or 12 assists and 10 or 12 rebounds. You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of a beast mode type game, or even more, like 40. Like, we've seen him do that before. I think that he needs to have some sort of combination of being aggressive and drawing in defenders to kind of keep other guys or get other guys open and get them open looks. I just don't trust I don't know if you or Ohm feel this way, I just don't trust his teammates to knock down these shots and knock down the opportunities in front of them. I've been saying this for a long time, man. I feel like this team with the Cavs, granted, it's not an exact comparison because there's clearly differences. Kyrie's young and Dwayne Wade was older and dealing with injuries, and Bosh and Love are different players. But ultimately, in 2014, we saw the Heat come back and play a rematch in the finals against the Spurs, a team they won in dramatic fashion. They snatched the series from them, right? We saw that play out. We saw how the Spurs, through a couple of games, it was competitive, and then all of a sudden they wiped the floor with them. A lot of that boiled down to a lot of the circumstances that Cleveland's dealing with, which is their defense had real slippage from year to year. Now, the Heat's defense wasn't this bad as the Cavs was, but they had enough slippage that Shane Battier talked about it plenty in before the series and after the series. And their role players got old. And I look at the Cavs' role players, and I'm like, yeah, they're not great. Like, they're not young. We talked about Darren and Kyle Korver and those guys.
And when they have to run as much as they do to defend the Warriors and play at that pace, they're not going to have the same energy for offense, and it's going to be a lot more on the big three. And, yeah, it does. There is that comparison. It does seem to make sense. I wonder if these guys get hot at any given point, like if they get any sort of comfort level. Because, look, it's clearly more difficult to defend the Warriors than anybody you play in the Eastern Conference, so there's an adjustment period. But I'm not ruling out the idea that they can't adjust defensively and that maybe some of these shots won't go down. And, again, if they pay extra attention to Durant and force other people to hit shots, that they can, you know, find a way to get confident. But the idea of that happening four times out of six now seems very, very slim, unless somebody gets hurt.
You know, You know what I'm wondering, what I wanted to ask you guys is, we're all guilty of Monday morning quarterbacking, of course. I mean, that's the business we're in. But do you think, you know, George and Izzy, you guys have been around LeBron, okay, especially around that time where, George, you just mentioned toward the end of the Heat era. And I'm wondering, after this game one, do you think LeBron is thinking, we're just not good enough? And now in his head, he's already, because LeBron likes to think 3, 4, 5 steps ahead. Is LeBron thinking, obviously, I still want to try and win this championship, but this team is not good enough to, as it is, to basically compete for a championship?
That's a great question.
That he might have doubts with, he might have doubts with Irving and Love again.
That's a great question, because I took that when he answered. He was asked the question about, I guess, I don't remember the exact question, but it was something about what's the biggest difference or something like that, you know, now with this team. And he just said, KD. Right? Like, that to me was almost him admitting, we may not be good enough to beat this team now that they've gotten Durant, and I may need to figure this thing out.
The funny thing about LeBron is that he's a combination of having that bravado that you need to have to be that good, but also a realist. And so he depending on when you're talking to him, he can convince himself that I, LeBron James, can carry any group of scrubs against any super team because I am that good. And then, you know, sometimes you just kind of go out there and just like, man, I have to be above and beyond every second out here in order for us to have a chance. And you realize that, yeah, that might not be possible. And I have a lot of people to trust that I don't know if I can trust. And so he's got that good balance there. So sometimes he'll say, you know, something like, oh, don't worry, I have confidence that even though we have the 22nd best defense, we'll get to the finals and we might even be able to win another championship. And then he does that and just like, wow, he did it. And then, you know, and he sort of reinforces his own beliefs, but then you get beat down like this and realize that, man, there's just too much over there, and sort of the realist in him kicks in. So I do think he's sort of in that mode, but not saying, okay, we have no shot. It's just a matter of schematically trying to figure something out to give him an opportunity. Before we take this break real quick, the Rihanna thing. I saw ESPN did a quick breakdown of it. It wasn't even Rihanna. That was Yelling Brick.
Right.
It was the woman she was
around
with.
The world have been waiting for this since they went to camp in October.
That brick right there. Yeah. That was not Rihanna if you look at video on it. I don't know what to ask about this other than, is it cool that Rihanna's like the celebrity NBA fan? Because she's at more of these games than I think any of them.
First of all, I think the whole thing that made it go viral last night were two things. One, Jeff Van Gundy in the middle of the telecast just blurting out, oh, my God, Rihanna just walked by, and man, oh, man, you know, how about that, whatever. And Jeff, you know, it's so funny because we covered Jeff here in New York, and Jeff is terrific like that. And just, you know, two polar opposites, Jeff Van Gundy and Rihanna, it's just amazing. Then to see the memes kind of come out after that of kind of Jeff Van Gundy and Rihanna was hilarious. And then the Kevin Durant stare down, which at first I was kind of like, is he looking in her area? I wasn't quite sure if he was looking at her or not. And then you see, like, after the game, these little, like, you know, viral videos of Rihanna walking through the arena and the Bowser Arena walking out and just kind of talking about how she's still sticking by LeBron and, you know, using cuss words with that. I thought was awesome to see. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think she's a real fan, and I think it makes it fun. That's why.
Oh, yeah, look, I don't think there's any question. I love it. I love it. I don't know if I love it if I'm Savannah, though, that she keeps, like, giving all this love to LeBron. I'll be honest with you there.
We'll leave that right there. We'll be back in a moment with more finals talk here on the NBA Lockdown Podcast. But first, let me tell you about the best new way to buy business travel. It's called Upside.com. And I'm telling you, if you're not a business traveler, you know someone who is, you have to tell them about Upside. Here's why you'll love it. Every time you buy a trip at Upside, you save a ton of money, and they give you an Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time. The way they do it is really clever. Upside bundles your flights and hotel together for one low price. Bundling prices saves money, especially on business travel. So Upside gives you free Amazon gift cards. If you're a frequent business traveler, your company saves a ton of money, and you get thousands a year just for buying your air and hotel together at Upside. Plus, you still get all your miles. You'd be crazy not to check out Upside.com if you're shopping for business travel. It takes just 3 minutes to see how much you can save by buying your flights and hotel together for one low price. And check out what Upside has arranged for you. Use the code LOCKDOWN, and you're guaranteed to get at least a $100 Amazon gift card your first trip. The code LOCKDOWN gets you at least a $100 Amazon gift card for free. How can you not do it? It's a no-brainer. Save big on travel and get a big gift card every trip. Upside.com. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details. So back to the finals here. There is one guy missing, and that's Steve Kerr. I thought it was funny. I was doing a Around the Horn yesterday, and I didn't use the joke because I didn't want to steal it this particular time. But the producer says in my ear about Mike Brown, why, you know, the Warriors are should be a favorite here. And he says Mike Brown's really good at getting LeBron to not win championships. And so
hashtag hate hard.
So I thought it was cool that he got a chance to coach against them and win that game. But Steve Kerr says he might be back for game two. Is there a reason to even want him back at this point? Like, should we just kind of let Steve get healthy and or deal with his pain at home? And doesn't seem like they, quote unquote, need him out there right now.
I think his role at the moment where he's involved in the game planning, the practices, even in game, right? Pre-game, halftime, post-game potentially. I think that role is suitable for right now. If he comes back, I just wonder about his own health more than anything else. I don't worry about the state of the team, like if this is going to cause some sort of issue. No, as a matter of fact, Mike Brown has been very much in line with, hey, Steve, whenever you're ready, this is your team. And Mike Brown is just such a nice man that I don't believe otherwise. But yeah, like I just think because of his health situation and at least the way Doris was talking about it yesterday in the game, like I don't think there's a reason for him to come back.
Oh, don't you want to protect Mike Brown when you go to Cleveland though? Like you need Steve Kerr back there by game three.
Oh yeah, well, you know, I was thinking, if there was a time, if Steve Kerr, all things being equal, Steve Kerr is healthy enough to do it, I would hold him out for game two and bring him back on the road.
Yep.
think they don't really have that need for him at home. I think they'll be all right at home and kind of feed off the crowd, and Mike Brown should be able to navigate it. And I think Mike Brown can navigate it on the road too. But if there was a time to bring him back, it would be for those road games. I totally agree with that if he's healthy.
I hope he comes back just so we can see him experience this. And hopefully, you know, if the Warriors win this championship, that he's relatively pain-free during that celebration and he can really soak it in, because last couple years must have been, I mean, that must have been absolute hell for him. And, you know, I've said it before, you could see it in his face, you could see it in his body language every time in pregame whenever you did a game, a Warriors game. And, like, if it was obviously that bad then and it's gotten worse to the point where he can't even deal with it right now and can't even work most of the time, that's, whew, I can't imagine.
What I think is what kind of gave me perspective was listening to your show the other night and Ramona come on, and Ramona was basically saying how like it was like the picture, like picture having the worst migraine you've ever had and having that all the time and just this intense pain that there's no answer for and nobody knows how to treat it. That to me is like really, really terrifying and scary. So if there's any way, like I think they were going to say, I've read that when he's watching these games, he's basically laying down and watching it on the floor or while laying down, because that's the only way that he can watch it comfortably. So to me, there's just no way that his body could take the strains of sitting on the bench, standing up and moving around and doing these huddles in the intensity of an NBA Finals game. I'd just rather see him kind of sit on the sidelines and watch this and not be there on the bench.
And speaking of painful, there was an entirely unnecessary and frankly, it bothered me, beef between Austin Rivers and his former teammate, Big Baby Davis. And Austin Rivers was on Fox, what was it, Undisputed, basically saying that Big Baby was overweight. He was late to practices and he did not know the plays. Big Baby came to his own defense, not very strong. Not very strong. He said two of those three were actually right. And here was the actual terrible sound, in my opinion, from Big Baby defending himself against Austin Rivers.
I'm in Hawaii minding my own business, and I look on Undisputed and I see old punk Austin Rivers talking. Come on, man. Yeah, I might have been overweight a little bit. Probably late for one or two practices. Come on, man. Don't know the plays? Come on, bro. You're lying now, bro. Now you're lying. Come on now, man. Second of all, your father gave you your money. Don't say to me. Your father gave you your money. You ain't worked for it. I was there. I seen you at practice. You didn't give a thinking you all that wearing them tight pants and you know, your father gave you all that money so you can go wear those tight pants. But keep your mouth closed, man. Shut up, man. You're a bum who's been given the world. Shut up and just stay under your father.
Is it me or is that a terrible defense? Like, yeah, I was overweight. Yeah, I was like, come on, man. I knew the plays. And oh, by the way, like the father defense, like, come on. Like, yes, he gave him his team, but Austin Rivers worked his butt off to get to where he was. Like, that's just Big Baby Davis spitting all over his phone for no reason. And I can't believe we're talking about it.
I do feel there probably is a lot of people that in the NBA that feel that Austin Rivers, you know, got a lot of the things he got because of his dad, and he's on the team there because of his dad and got the big contract because of his dad. But look, Austin Rivers, I think, has proven that he can play in the NBA. So to say that he doesn't basically deserve to be in the NBA outside because he's only there because of his dad and he's getting that money is bull.
George, who's going to have the better career when it's all said and done, Austin Rivers or what that career that Big Baby Davis had?
Austin Rivers. I mean, the thing is, like, Austin Rivers.
You think Austin Rivers had a better career? Is that what you asked me?
Will, when it's all said and done, will Austin Rivers have a better career?
Yes. To this point, I would still slight lean towards Big Baby Davis.
So slight lean. Okay. Yes. But the your dad gave you your money argument falls flat when you're basically have the same career, right? Because, Austin Rivers clearly did something, right? And it might be better than what you did.
Look, I think that there's a couple of things at play here, right? Like, this is how I would attack this. I think both guys are right. Clearly, Big Baby Davis didn't take his job with the Clippers as seriously as he would have liked. By the way, had he, you know, if that wasn't the case, some team would have signed him by now, is my guess. But unfortunately for Austin, you know, there's been reports already out there prior to this Big Baby Davis commentary about his dad gave him his money. And there's guys in that locker room that look at him that way. So I don't think he's saying something that's not already been at least thrown out to the public in some way, shape, or form.
No, that's all true. That's all true. And I don't care about any of that. He can't say any of it. Because
why? You're saying Big Baby
can't say any of it.
Why?
He can't say any because he's the same player. Like, he's
so you got to be a better player.
Rotation player, right? His entire career, the same way Austin Rivers was. So you can't do that. Like, you can't. But anyway, my head's going to explode because I can't believe in the middle
of
the
finals. I just like all the bleeping.
Finals,
yeah, I like that he answered in Hawaii. I think that was – it's just all of it is great to me. Like, I'm good with it.
And he's still spitting. But how about
– is this the first time where we had somebody kind of basically fat shame somebody and then that person skinny shame the person back?
The skinny pants, the skinny jeans. It's funny, man. That's true.
Tight pants.
If that's your go-to, man, tight pants, you got nowhere to go. But okay. I can't do this anymore. Let's hit some crowd noise.
Crowd noise.
Josh, if they don't know what you do by now, then they haven't been listening. So.
That's true. But let's stick on this Clippers theme for a second here. We got this crowd noise question from Daniel Lupercio, at Daniel Lupercio 7. And Daniel would like to know if Steve Ballmer should replace Doc the GM, not Doc the coach, but just the GM, with Sam Hinkie. And could that be a good fit for the Clippers if their core
depends.
Stays together?
Do they need five more centers and to be really bad for a decade? Then yes, sign him up.
Hashtag hate hard.
Oh, man. It's
That's
funny.
All I
is.
Got on Hinkie.
Yeah, apparently you're not a fan of it. George and Ohm, what do you think?
I missed the question. I'm sorry.
I don't.
should Ballmer hire Sam Hinkie?
Should Ballmer hire Sam Hinkie? Well, he wants Jerry West, right? So, as a consultant, I just don't see him and Doc getting along.
Fair.
I don't see a Hinkie being a good fit with. I mean, look, maybe we're kind of just strictly judging Hinkie as a guy who has to rebuild from scratch as opposed to joining a team that would already be good. We haven't really seen that, I guess, as him as GM, but. I just think whoever they're going to bring in has to be a guy that Doc is going to be okay with. So I don't really know what their relationship is.
All right, guys. Next crowd noise question from Chloe DX at DXE9. Chloe says, after King James retires, we know that he's made mention of the fact that he'd like to own a team. But what role do you think he'd actually be best at in the NBA? Coaching, front office, etc.?
I don't think there's any chance he would coach. Now, I think he can. I think he can do it very well, at least in comparison to other superstars, you know, whether you can try to envision Jordan coaching or Larry Bird coaching again or Magic coaching again. I think he could do it very well. I think he explains things very well and has that type of patience, but I don't think he would bring himself, how can I put this, down to that level, right? Like, he's beyond that when he retires. He is entrepreneur. He's, you know, businessman. He's greatest of all time. He's possibly. And, I don't think he's working for some owner. I think he is an owner. And so I think that's where he goes. If he's in the NBA, he's going to be majority owner of a team in some respect. I don't think it's going to be coach or front office even where he's going to be working for somebody.
I agree with this. I really don't have anything else to add.
I think LeBron basically wants to be on the same level, if not greater, than Michael at everything. So I think as not only as a player, but also as an entrepreneur, I think LeBron would probably have to be a peer of Michael, and that would have to be as owner.
All right, guys, and we got this one from the real Mr. Thomas. He's at CT23. This is an interesting question. He says, what is the end of the big four in Golden State, meaning who leaves first out of those four players?
I don't think any leave, but I think Clay would be the most likely, right?
I don't know if that would be likely because I think as long as Steph and KD stay, Draymond and Klay basically recognize where their bread is buttered. Like, they're not going to go somewhere else and be like, yeah, I'll be able to get the same looks if I'm Klay on another team, or if I'm Draymond, I'll be able to lead the offense the way I do with this team because, you know, the versatility with the players are there, the type of players, obviously defensively too, where you can switch and everything else. Like, you really, really, really have to examine where you're going, and it has to be an ideal fit as this is, because, man, this is a dream scenario for those two guys. So it would have to be either KD or Steph to really break it up. And of those two, I mean, Steph's probably going to sign his new deal long term. Of those two, my guess it would be KD. KD would float, maybe win a 2-3 championships and say, you know what, I'll get my Supermax deal maybe, or maybe I don't care about it, I don't know. But that's just a random guess because I don't think any of them would leave. I think KD's super happy. I think Steph knows that's the place where he's going to define himself, his legacy, and become one of the greatest players ever. And those other two guys, if they leave, would be making a big mistake.
I do wonder how good if he were the man on his own team. And if I wonder that, and if C.J. McCollum can wonder that, as he tweeted last night during the finals, that, look, Klay is going to get, you know, Klay is going to win another championship, and he's going to join his own, he's going to go to his own team. If there are other people wondering that, I do think that Klay probably wonders that in the back of his head, too, you know?
Absolutely, guys. Keep those questions coming. Use the hashtag crowdnoise. And also, I want to tell you that if you haven't heard yet, ESPN's Streak for the Cash is now simply called Streak. And it's available in the ESPN Fantasy app. So if you like fantasy sports, if you like winning prizes, and if you like winning big prizes while playing fantasy sports, then make sure you download Streak in the ESPN Fantasy app to start your streak today. The finals obviously are here, and it's the perfect time to predict, pick, and win big. So download the ESPN Fantasy app and start your streak today, Izzy.
All right, thanks, Josh. And that's going to do it for this edition of the NBA Lockdown Podcast. For George, for Ohm, I'm Izzy. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to NBA Lockdown on ESPN Radio. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page on ESPNRadio.com.